This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For generations of American workers, a pension was the gold watch at the end of the rainbow, set monthly payments to ensure a guaranteed income after retirement. For the rest of the workforce, whose 401ks exist at the mercy of the stock market, there's a lot to envy in the security of a pension. If it was only that easy. Big losses in industry, in the airline and steel industries in particular, triggered a lot of bankruptcies, which forced more and more companies to default on their pensions, and that threw responsibility onto a little-known government office, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. As a result, some pensioners received dramatically reduced benefits, and the PBGC itself is running a long-term deficit of $23 billion. We taxpayers may have to pick up the tab whether we get pensions or not, and if so, the experts warn that we should pay a lot soon or a lot more later. Later on in the program, we'll talk about the fallout from Kmart's announced merger with Sears Roebuck. But first, the looming crisis in the pension system, and we want to hear from you. If your company's defaulted on its pension plan, we'd like to hear how it's affected your life, whether you've hit retirement or whether you're just looking at a more uncertain future. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is J. Mark Ivrey, a senior fellow on economic policy at the Brookings Institution, and it's nice of you to be with us today.
Nice to be with you.
To start out, I gather 17% of the workforce actually gets pensions these days. This used to be a much bigger deal.
That's right. We've seen a decline in this traditional type of pension plan, the kind that's called defined benefit, and that promises an employee a particular dollar amount per month for life.
That's the defined benefit.
That's the defined benefit. By contrast to the defined contribution, which is typically these days a 401k, and as you were saying earlier, is at the mercy normally of the stock market or investment performance.
Now, the companies that tend to offer these kinds of plans, they're older industrial-type corporations?
Typically, they're old economy companies, autos, tires, steel industry, and typically they're collectively bargained as well. The airlines are an example of a collectively bargained industry that's not so much old economy, but that is quite substantially into defined benefit plans in the more traditional airlines, and not so in the newer airlines.
And you see this coming up as an issue even in the flight attendants negotiations, which are ongoing even as we speak, I guess.
Exactly.
Some state and local governments also use them, though.
A lot of state and local governments have defined benefit plans. They're very prevalent in that sector.
So now we've had so many bankruptcies and so many companies have defaulted on their pension plans that now this hitherto little-known government corporation, the PBGC, is now sending checks to more than a million people a month.
That's right. And the PBGC is there for that purpose. It's essentially a government insurance company that insures pensions of this defined benefit type, not 401ks, but traditional defined benefit pensions, from bankruptcy of the company that sponsors the pension.
Now, how can these pension funds be underfunded? I mean, aren't the companies are supposed to pay in every month? These are defined contributions too, right?
Well, the companies are supposed to fund these plans according to certain rules, but they have flexibility. The idea is that the company doesn't have to put all the money in today that might have to be paid out 30 years from now. So the company is supposed to project what the needs will be to pay the pensions years from now and put in enough now that it'll grow with investment earnings to be sufficient when they need it.
If you'd like to join this conversation about the looming crisis in pension benefits, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is J. Mark Ivrey at the Brookings Institution, and let's begin with a call from Robert, who's calling from Detroit, Michigan.
Hello.
Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that these companies are allowed, you just alluded to it earlier, how are they allowed to go so lean on the funding of this? You know, how can they project 30 years down the road how much money they're going to have? I mean, that's ludicrous. I mean, I would think that's what the government is in place to protect us, the citizens, from. situations like this. And that's the gist of it.
Yeah, before you hang up, Robert, you sound angry. Is this something that affects you personally?
I carry baggage over from the election, but I think the core issue for me is, between the Enrons and, how many issues, I'm not even going to waste time talking about them, where it seems that they're just too big for the individual or a city or a county or a state to deal with, that you expect the federal government to take care of. And lo and behold, time and time again, what unfolds is the citizens get stuck with the bill.
Yeah, okay.
When is somebody going to wake up and say, hey, enough?
Well, Mark Every.
I'll take my answer off there. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Robert. Is Congress going to wake up and say, enough?
Congress is waking up in the sense that there's very active consideration of how to reform these funding rules so that, Robert, companies won't be able to go quite so lean on funding in the future. The reason we got to this point, though, is that it used to be even worse. Back in the 60s, a company named Studebaker, that some of us remember, that made automobiles, went under. And the employees, several thousand of them, who had pensions promised by Studebaker, found that there was nothing in the kitty to pay those pensions. And they went unpaid. That was the crisis that gave rise to the funding requirements that we have today. The problem is those requirements probably are not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Sean from San Jose, California.
Hi there. It's my understanding, there's an echo here, that all companies pay the same premium into the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation regardless of how underfunded their pension plan is. As long as it's funded up to at least a certain level, which has actually been encouraging companies to underfund their plan as much as possible because they all get the same benefit and they all get the same premium.
Okay, so this would affect those. Sean, you're asking about those companies that are in the PBGC, and that's not everybody, but go ahead, Mark Every.
Sean, that is partly true and partly not true. When a company is underfunded by a certain amount, then they actually do have to pay a higher premium that reflects the fact that they're underfunded. And the higher premium is on top of a uniform premium that everybody, all the companies with a defined benefit plan, pay. So what you end up with is that the companies that are not funding as well pay more, but by the same token, if they actually go under, they end up imposing a cost on all the companies that are premium payers, particularly the healthy ones. What we don't have is a premium that's related to the risk that the company itself will go bankrupt. So while the premium is higher if the plan is less funded, that's a separate question from whether this is a financially strong or a financially weak company. And traditionally, the government has been loath to venture into the area of rating the companies to determine just how financially sound they are.
But in the ballpark of risk, don't you also get companies who, if they're a little underfunding, say, look, we're in trouble here, so maybe we take a flyer on XYZ Industries. That looks like it's going to be a hot stock, as opposed to leaving our money in blue chips, which will grow but slowly.
That could happen, although the law does require the people who run the pension trust to be prudent and to invest in an expert way that diversifies the assets so they don't put too many eggs in any one basket.
Mm-hmm. Sean, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Joining us now is the executive director of the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, Bradley Belt. He's with us from Glen Allen in Virginia. Thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And as we mentioned earlier, the last number we saw in terms of your deficit was $23 billion thereabouts. And as I understand it, either that money's got to be made up by increased charges to all of the companies that are in the pension benefit program now, or a taxpayer bailout.
Well, at the end of the day, the burden's going to fall on either the other premium payers in the system, and if that doesn't happen for one reason or another or isn't sustainable, then there would certainly be pressures brought to bear on Congress to tap the taxpayers for additional monies.
Now, the people, the other companies in the pension plan would say, hey, we've been responsible. Why should we pick up the tab for those people who weren't responsible? A taxpayer with a 401k might say, I don't have a pension plan. How come I have to pick up the tab for everybody else?
Those arguments both have and should be made. The bottom line is the companies that are making the pension promises should be the ones that are paying for those promises.
But they are bankrupt and presumably don't have the money.
That is the situation that is developed under current law, and that highlights the problems with the funding rules, with the premium rules. And I heard a little bit of the earlier discussion just before I came on and would agree with many of the comments that were made in that regard. We need to change the system so that we don't get to the point that we are right now. Previous commentator noted that, you know, the funding rules are supposed to require a company to pay a higher premium, for example, when they are underfunded. The problem, one of many problems with the current legal and regulatory framework, is that those additional funding requirements, or those additional premium requirements, are extraordinarily easy to evade.
And even if you had to make them, wouldn't that tend to drive you even quicker into bankruptcy?
Well, I mean, the idea is that let's address this long before you become a credit risk, long before you're in financial difficulty as a sponsor. Let's make sure that plans are appropriately and prudently funded all through the process so you can deal with inevitable business cycle issues.
Now, once a company goes into bankruptcy, defaults on its pension plan, and it kicks over to you guys at the PBGC, you just pay out what the company used to pay out?
No. By statute, and this is something that Congress established, there are limits on the insurance coverage that we provide, just as is the case for the FDIC with respect to, you know, bank insurance, for deposit insurance. That's $100,000 per deposit or an institution. Our limit, the statutorily set limit, is about $45,000 a year for someone who's retiring at age 65.
So people who are retiring, for example, or retired from the airline industry who had pensions considerably larger than that, if their company went bankrupt, they're getting a lot less money.
That would be correct. And that's one of the unfortunate outcomes when a company terminates its pension plan is employees are at risk of losing benefits that they thought were coming to them.
What about health benefits? Are those part of pension plans? Some companies did provide those in their pension plans.
They are maybe part of company-sponsored retirement benefits or pension benefits. They are not benefits that are insured by the PBGC.
So if that was the case and your company is out of business, you're out of luck.
That is correct under current law.
Under current law. And as I understand, we just have about a minute and a half left in this segment. Can you outline some of the reforms that you're proposing that you think might address some of these problems?
I would be delighted to do so. First and foremost, we need to strengthen the funding rules, improve them so they actually get the job done, that financially weak companies have well-funded pension plans long before they become financially weak, and that there's less an ability to go on so-called funding holidays and not put in monies and still, for example, provide new benefit increases. Two, provide some greater flexibility for companies that are actually acting responsibly and who are financially healthy. Let's not burden them with overly complex rules and regulations where they don't pose a risk of loss to the pension insurance program. On the premium side, make them more reflective of the risks that are posed to the pension insurance program. Make them more reflective of the funding needs of the pension insurance program. Increase transparency. Let's get more information in the hands of participants and investors. They can begin to impose some additional discipline as well themselves if they have better information, and obviously they're in a better position to make informed policy business decisions or life decisions. And finally, give the PBGC a few additional tools to strengthen its hands in dealing with companies that are not acting responsibly, particularly when we're in a bankruptcy context.
Bradley Belt of the PBGC, that's the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. More with him and with Mark Ivrey of the Brookings Institution when we come back from a short break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about the troubles facing the U.S. pension system. Experts say most corporate pension plans are underfunded. Several large bankruptcies have forced the government agency that insures pensions to pick up more and more of the slack. We're talking right now with Bradley Belt, the head of that agency, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. Also here with us in Studio 3A is J. Mark Ivrey, who used to be the Treasury Department's top official on pensions, now at the Brookings Institution. Of course, you're invited to join us. Are you worried about the future of your pension plan? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And let's get a caller on the line. Ivan joins us. Ivan is calling from Longview in Washington.
Yes. I worked for a company for 29 years. They sold out to another company. That company owned the plant for 2 years, filed bankruptcy. PBGC took over the pension program and cut my pension $600 a month. I'm on a disability pension. I don't have the option of going out and earning another one.
Bradley Belt, Ivan seems to be one of those people who hits one of your regulations.
Yeah, that's it's a very unfortunate set of circumstances, and one of the real tragedies when pension plans are terminated is participants such as this caller are at risk of losing benefits. It's not actually PBGC that's making some determination that they're not entitled to more benefits. That's simply a matter of the law that's established by Congress. So that's in statute. And unfortunately, there's not much we can do about that without a change in law. But that's one reason we want to make sure that plans are fully funded in the first instance and that companies are able to maintain their plans. And by the way, I just want to say hello to Mark. I didn't realize where all those erudite comments beforehand were coming from.
Well,
I understand.
Before we let go of Ivan, he doesn't get anything from his member of Congress saying, here's the law and this is why you're getting $600 a month less. He's getting a letter from you saying, here's your check, and it's a lot less than you used to get.
Well, certainly we need to do a better job as an institution, and we will on a go-forward basis, of educating people, or all the 44 million workers and retirees that we provide insurance coverage to, as to what the PBGC is, the value of the insurance coverage we provide, but also the limitations in that insurance coverage, and those instances when they need to be concerned, when they need to be interacting with their companies, with their plan administrator, even with their union representative.
Ivan, does any of that help?
No. I got another comment here.
Go ahead.
The company that I worked for 28 years is still doing very well and very prosperous. What they did is they sold off their holdings to a company that tried to pick up the plant and make it run. When they sold off the plant, they sold off the responsibility to my pension. The company that I actually earned my pension from is very sound.
Yeah. Mark Ivrey, is this a technique that some companies do use?
It's not necessarily a technique that a company is using deliberately to dump the pension plan, but it is a very unfortunate circumstance. And I think that what we need, and this is echoing something that I think Mr. Belt was saying a couple of minutes ago, are to give PBGC more weapons in its arsenal. For example, to consider whether it needs to intervene where a strong company with a pension plan that's not very well funded passes that plan on to a financially weak company through a corporate transaction.
So Ivan should be writing to his member of Congress and to his senators?
I'm already doing that.
Okay.
And I've been told by PBGC the only way I can possibly get this changed is get the laws changed. Unfortunately, it still costs me X number of dollars a month to live, and they're taking it out of my pocket. I earned a disability pension by working for almost 30 years for that company, and I'm receiving a pension of less than 12 years. They need to go back to the companies that actually funded those pensions to begin with. It shouldn't be right for a large company to sell off their holdings to a deadbeat brother-in-law and ditch their responsibilities to their employees.
Ivan, thank you, and good luck to you. I hope you can find a way.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Let's go now to Lawrence. Lawrence is calling from Miami.
Yes, hi. I was calling because I think that
what Ivan was just talking about is part of my concern. I'm a former airline employee, and my concern has to go along with, I believe that the current law and the way the PBGC is set up, it actually encourages companies to file bankruptcy because they can get rid of the pension obligation. And I think that that is what we're going to see. For instance, now with United Airlines requesting it due to U.S. Air, I think you're going to see Delta Airlines following suit, and then I think you'll see an American Airlines and so forth and so on. And I believe that this will continue to happen. And I really would hope that those that are in power, those that are in place at the PBGC, would fight hard to ensure that that doesn't happen, because I think companies are setting themselves up to watch and see what United does, and if United and U.S. Air gets away with it, so will American and so will Delta, and I would just like to hear their comments.
Okay, thanks for the call, Lawrence. Bradley Belt, I understand your most recent figures included the assumption that a couple of big airlines were going to go into bankruptcy.
Well, we, under accounting standards, we have to book losses that are realized pursuant to Financial Accounting Standard 5, and so we've had to book some of our exposure to the airline industry. But let me get at the questioner's real question, which I think is a critically important one. I actually agree with the sentiments. I share his concern about the potential domino effect, and everybody is looking at what's transpiring with respect to U.S. Airways and UAL and saying, gee, is this a viable business strategy to offload my pension costs so I can become more competitive? We are using every tool in our arsenal, but as Mark noted, we have limited arrows in the quiver, we have limited weapons in the arsenal to be able to forestall those types of tactics. We are pursuing in litigation, in bankruptcy court, challenges to those actions, and we are trying to enforce the funding requirements under the Employee Retirement Security Act. But bankruptcy judges, if they don't see it in the bankruptcy code, tend to ignore our entreaties. But beyond using every tool we have under current law, we are also proposing changes in law to be able to address the situation that he outlined and make sure that doesn't come to pass.
And let me just ask you, Mark Avery, is this a you see companies, well, they may not be cheering bankruptcy, but you know, some of them seem to be looking at it and say, well, this is a way to get rid of not only the pensions but the union contracts too.
Neil, that points to the fact that what we're really looking at here is a larger industrial policy problem. PBGC is caught in the middle, and most importantly, people like Ivan and the other folks who've been calling are caught in the middle of a situation where we've got old economy industries that took on very large, what are now referred to as legacy obligations, whether it's pensions or retiree health, which were promises that they made, and they ought to now keep. We ought to ensure that those promises get kept to the fullest extent possible, but the companies have now suffered from competition globally and from sectoral trends in the industries, so they don't have as many active workers to support the retiree benefits for the much larger number of retirees. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, the cost of these legacy benefits, health and pensions, is a much larger portion of the overall assets and income of the company than had ever been anticipated.
And Mr. Belt, I think it was one of your former officials who described this as a Ponzi scheme, effectively, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Well, I'm not sure I would go quite that far, but it is worth noting that there have been, for example, a number of contrast or comparisons of this situation to the S&L crisis some 20 years ago. That was a liquidity crisis. We are not facing, as a corporation, a liquidity crisis. We have almost $40 billion in assets. We're paying a little over $3 billion a year out in benefits now, so we're able to pay benefits a number of years down the road. I guess the reference to the Ponzi scheme aspect of this stems from the fact that when we trustee a plan, we actually take over the assets in that plan, and even if the plan is underfunded, those are assets available to pay out current benefits, but obviously we're taking on even a greater chunk of liability that has to be paid out over a longer period of time. So in some respects, every time we take on a terminated plan, one can argue that we're able to pay benefits for an even greater period of time. The issue is the hole keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper, and the day of reckoning has to come sometime.
And if Congress does not act soon, I think you've been quoted as saying you fear it'll spiral out of control.
Well, I certainly believe that this is manageable, but it does require that we take prudent course of action now rather than letting this problem fester. What we want to avoid is the situation we saw back in the SNL crisis, is trying to sweep it under a rug until it really did become a crisis and it became a liquidity crisis, and the cost, the price tag of resolving that matter grew to extraordinary proportions. We can and should avoid that same type of outcome in this case.
Bradley Belt, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure, Neil.
Bradley Belt, Executive Director of the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, with us from Glen Allen, Virginia. Joining us now from Montgomery, Alabama, is David Bronner, who's earned the title of Maverick for his investment strategies as CEO of the Retirement Systems of Alabama. The RSA owns big chunks of golf courses, real estate developments, and a controlling stake in an airline. And it's good to have you on the program today.
Thank you very much, sir.
We've talked a lot about underfunding problems of large private pensions. Do states run into similar problems?
Depends on the state. Normally, the states have done a little better job because they started funding earlier on, and they haven't really had the bubble that private industry has gone through, like the steel industry or the airline industry, where you lay off everybody or you have big changes. So the government programs as a whole are probably... You know, there's a few, there's a handful, probably five or six states that have problems that I would say are 50 to 60% funded. But the bulk of them have been around the 80 to 90%. Actually, a number of them were well over 100% funded, you know, up until the little stock market correction 2 years ago.
Yeah. Now, you've advocated a more aggressive approach.
In what respect?
You own pieces, I think, of golf courses, among other things. I mean, is that a that's an unusual investment?
It's unusual, but again, if you look at the attributes of each state and you look at a individual state and you say, what can we do that's unique? Then you have that opportunity to do whatever it may be. I mean, we have the typical stocks and bonds. We have the the second largest office building in the world, which is 55 Water in New York City,
mm-hmm.
and the typical international stocks. But again, what I've tried to do, which is a little unique, is because Alabama is such a poor state, is to try to make things economically happen at home whenever I can, when I can get even, you know, close to the same rate of return I can any other place.
Well, I need to point out that the RSA owns 37% of U.S. Airways, which is one of the airlines that's got pension problems of its own. It's considering default, as I understand it. You're chairman of the board for U.S. Air, which I guess puts you on both sides of this.
Well, it does. It was an interesting opportunity. You have to remember that even though a $240 million investment seems like a big one, it's less than 1% of our assets, and we saw the potential a year and a half ago before the oil crisis and other things is having a reasonable upside.
But I'm just saying you're on the opposite sides of the pension looming crisis, if you will.
That's right, because I was interested in listening to your PBGC guy talk about his problems, and certainly we're not doing anything to help his problems. We're adding to them.
Yeah. We're talking about the looming crisis in pensions. You're invited to join us here on Talk of the Nation. You're listening to NPR News. And let me just remind you that our guests are Dr. David Bronner, the CEO of the Retirement Systems of Alabama, and also with us is J. Mark Ivry at the Brookings Institution. He joins us here in the studio in Washington, D.C. Let's get a caller on the line, and let's go to Mike. Mike's calling from Bloomfield, Michigan.
Yeah, I first of all think that comprehensive pension reform is absolutely needed, but I'm coming kind of from the employer perspective of the language being used today is that irresponsible companies or companies that haven't been responsible in funding their pension plans. I think that's kind of an overstatement, when in fact a lot of the I think what a lot to blame is the pension funding scheme that's been in place that the Congress put in. And it's countercyclical. It doesn't allow for companies to take deductions when they are making money, that they can put it into a pension plan. But then when the economy goes down and companies aren't doing as well and they don't have the money to put into the plan, that's where we've gotten into this funding crisis. And I think it's going to be a difficult task for Congress to balance, current employees and current economy versus these legacy costs that that are really a refuge from a stronger manufacturing sector with the automobile companies or with the airlines.
Well, Mark Avery, let's get a response from you on that.
Well, I think that there's some truth to that, but employers are allowed to deduct contributions when they're doing reasonably well, up to the point where they're overfunded by a certain amount. And once they've got enough of a surplus or a cushion in the plan, that's when the opportunity to deduct begins to go away. Congress has, in fact, liberalized that, though it's not much discussed recently. There took effect this year a relaxation of the limits on company deductions for overfunded pensions. And the countervailing concern there is that if a company really has more than enough in its plan to keep contributing and deducting exactly when the company wants to, costs a lot of taxpayer dollars. So in order to keep our budget deficit within some sort of reasonable bounds, there's also an interest in limiting the deductions.
Well, just to follow up on that, though, is that...
And keep it quick if you can, Mike.
Sure. Part of the problem is the interest rate assumptions that people are discounting these liabilities at, and they fluctuate over time. So to the extent that we're in a better economy and the interest rates are higher, that means the liabilities are going to be lower. And that's kind of, again, where you get into the counter-cyclicality of this funding scheme that Congress put in, and that the deductions need to be maybe greater in good economic times.
Okay, Mike. Thanks very much. As I understand it also quickly, there were reforms on planned about 10 years ago that were sort of put off when the economy boomed and a lot of the pending problems seemed to evaporate.
Well, actually, there were reforms that were actually enacted about 10 years ago. And it was a situation that was not as acute as this, but somewhat similar.
Mm-hmm.
The same kinds of issues came up, and Congress tightened the funding rules. It just looks like, in an area as complex like this, they weren't tightened effectively enough.
Dr. David Bronner, before we let you go, I did want to ask you, you're in an odd situation again on both sides of this pension issue. You contemplate defaulting on one set of pensions, I guess, that's the airways, to secure the stability of another. That's for Alabama.
Well, that's yes and no. I mean, you have to remember that we invest in all kinds of industries, and it wouldn't be any different than if we were in the steel industry. And it's going through its change of life, as I would call it. So, yes, I represent a pension fund, but because we try to stay out of that limelight that you're talking about, we invest in the marketplace, and the marketplace says that you're going to get in industries, and industries are going to come and go, and you're going to have that problem of that company or companies trying to exist in what you referred to earlier as legacy industries. And when the new industry comes in, they start to lose money. So what do they look at? They look at pension costs and they look at health costs.
David Bronner, thank you very much. We appreciate your time today. We'd also like to thank J. Mark Avery of the Brookings Institution for being with us.